Well, when it comes to the development of autonomous vehicles, I don't know about you, but I increasingly feel like one of the blind men trying to understand the elephant in the ancient parable. To help us better understand some of the most recent developments on the autonomous vehicle front, we welcome back to the program award-winning Detroit News columnist and associate business editor, Daniel Howes. Daniel, good to hear your voice again.
Good to talk to you. Thanks for having me.
Daniel, I know you had a recent trip to Pittsburgh, and you've written a column about that, also a recent column on the Wello Run development. We're talking about the American Center for Mobility. But before we get into those two topics, as I mentioned in my open, a lot of folks are hearing a lot of things about mobility, particularly from some of the automotive executives. What's the difference between this whole mobility jargon and what we've been doing for the last 100 years?
Well, if I had to boil it down to a couple of phrases that people might understand, I would say number one is zero emissions, which points to electrification of the vehicle. And two is the quantum increase in computing power and sophistication of electronics in vehicles. It's very important for people who live in the breadbasket of the United States, in the heart of the Detroit auto industry, to understand that their experience that they see in their everyday life is not what is driving the mobility craze in the industry. What's really driving the mobility craze is large developing countries and or blocks of countries. Think China, think Western Europe, that are setting very, very aggressive regulatory standards that essentially are forcing the auto industry and as well the high-tech industries to come to terms with how they're going to move people in the future. And as I think, and the best example, or two best examples I can think of are China and Germany. Germany, which said by 2030, the only vehicles that will be sold in Germany will be zero emissions vehicles, period. China is essentially looking at leapfrogging a lot of that. Now, part of the reason is because they've got so much noxious emissions from their manufacturing base that they're trying to deal with it on the transportation side. But these represent huge, huge markets for the global auto industry and for the global tech industry. And that is what's really driving. And in a sense, if you want to think of it as a train, a mid-century train, the United States is kind of near the back of the train. It's the caboose. But what's at the front is China and Western Europe and other developing countries that are having to contend with a lot of noxious kind of environmental problems in the case of China, or in the case of Europe, really trying to be on the forefront of the environmental aspects of their society. And that's what's really driving the train. And so if you sit here in Michigan or in Ohio or in Indiana and you see your friends driving their big SUVs because gas is cheap, or they're getting a new F-150 pickup, and you say, why the heck would anybody want to do this? The reason is because big other parts of the world, which is where the growth is in the auto industry and, frankly, in the tech industry, is what's driving it.
You know, Daniel, I've been to both France and Germany recently, and it's tangible in Europe as far as the advancement, not only along these lines, but along a lot of green fronts. But the question always comes up, when you talk India or you talk China, you wonder if there's a lot of reality behind the rhetoric.
Well, listen, China's the largest auto market in the world. It's past the United States, and I don't think there's, absent a total economic cataclysm in China, is that going to change in any near term? General Motors builds and sells more cars in China than it does in the United States, and has for multiple years, and that's not going to change either. I think the thing that we have to wrap our heads around here is that this is not an either-or proposition. I recently had the opportunity to have dinner with one of the CEOs of the big three auto companies, and somebody was asking a question not unlike yours, and the response was, you know, we want people to still have their driver's license for some period of time, meaning this transition is not something you're not going to wake up in 2 years and it's going to be done. This is going to be a long time transition. It's going to take acceptance of the technologies. It's going to have to take a successful use of the technologies, meaning if there are a lot of accidents that are blamed on technologies, particularly in driverless cars, which are different than somewhat connected cars, you know, that can really slow public acceptance. So I think you're going to see this step out in a multi-stage process where at the time we get into driverless cars, those are most likely to be fleet cars that could be like Uber taxis, think of it like that, that can take you from point A to point B, that can take you from Detroit Metro Airport to a downtown hotel, that can do those kinds of things, but not that necessarily you're going to own and get at your own home. And the second thing to remember is that as we sit here today, almost all of the profits and revenue in these car companies today continues to come from the traditional side of the business that build the cars and the trucks, the gas engines, and in some cases diesel engines that you drive and that you pick up your family and you take on vacation. That's not likely to change quickly. It's going to be a long-term process. But the global auto industry represents about $2.5 trillion of annual revenue around the world. Estimates by Ford Motor Company are that the mobility space, or what they call the transportation services business, could be a $10 trillion annual business around the world. And as a result, you can see why not only the auto companies around the world, led by probably General Motors, Ford, Toyota, Volkswagen, Daimler would be the biggies, and the tech companies like Google and Apple and a lot of other Silicon Valley companies are rushing into this space. They need growth, and they see the growth potential in this space.
My guest is Daniel Howes. He's an award-winning and well-respected Detroit News columnist. He's also the associate business editor. Daniel, we were talking about the mobility space, autonomous vehicles. You recently had the opportunity to take a ride in a prototype in Pittsburgh. Tell us about the trip to Pittsburgh. And you wrote a column about it as well. I need to mention that your columns appear in the Detroit News every Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday. But tell us about the trip to DeBurg.
Hadn't been there in a long time, and I certainly have heard some cool things about it, and it was very impressive. It wasn't there very long. This was one of these 24-hour overnight in-and-out type of programs that I used to do many, many times. But very interesting to sit down and talk with the engineers and the executives of Delphi Automotive, which is a global supplier with executive offices based in Troy. A very sophisticated company, and a company called Mobileye, which is an Israeli startup, and I happen to have visited Mobileye last year when I was in Israel on a CEO mission, and they do vision cameras, essentially, in layman's terms, that are incorporated into automatic braking or, you know, cruise control or lane control kinds of things that are now being adapted for autonomous driving. It was very interesting. We did get a demo. We got to sit in a car, and frankly, it just drove around in a big circle in an industrial park. And it was funny. It had perfect road manners. I mean, it was a 25-mile-an-hour speed limit. It went 25 miles an hour. It came up to the intersection. It turned its own turn signal on. It was programmed not to turn right on red, even though it could have turned right on red. So they had very conservative system set up. They're going to be showing this at CES in Las Vegas in early January, and they're going to be doing it on about a 6.3-mile track or course, I think is a better way to put it, that will incorporate highways, city streets, overpasses, bridges, and they say they're touting it as being one of the most sophisticated and complex routes because they want to show the capability of what this car is able to do. Interesting to note, this car is already in testing in Singapore. Singapore, as we talked about earlier, is one of these kind of markets that is setting up very stringent emissions goals for the future. And so what a company like Delphi, or this joint venture between Delphi and Mobileye, are doing is saying, we're going to go to a place like this and we're going to test this. They have a test bed there, and they actually have some city streets they're able to do this in. So these things are already in testing. And I think that's what's important for listeners to understand. This is not Jetsons kind of stuff, if you remember the old cartoon. This is stuff that's really, really happening. The technology is there. I don't think anybody assumes that there are certain companies that are the leaders. I think one of the things as you dig deeper and deeper into this, from my perspective as a journalist, is you realize nobody has all the capability. Not an auto company, not Apple, not Google, not Mobileye, not, you know, nobody. What they're learning here is that Silicon Valley is learning that, wow, it's pretty hard to build a car. You know, when Detroit was on its back, and there were a lot of people, I think, in a lot of parts of the country and the world who thought, you know, those people don't know what they're doing in Detroit. I think as they've gotten their act together and are making a lot of money and are building products that people want to buy and are buying, what they've learned is it's not easy. And you've seen Google and Apple, who everybody predicted just a couple of years ago was going to take over the automotive world, backing away from their pretensions in the auto space and basically saying, we are software developers. That's what we do. We're not hardware people. The hardware people are in Detroit or Toyota operations in the United States and in Japan or in Germany. Those are the hardware people. We work with them in partnership, and they're always kind of looking for different kinds of partnerships and advantages in those partnerships. But I think that's what's developing right now, is that nobody is going to totally own the space. The question is going to be what combination of companies maybe is going to dominate the space.
Yeah, and that sort of anticipated my next comment. You mentioned Silicon Valley. We're going to talk about new developments in Detroit in this space. But one of the take-homes from reading your column is called Revive Steel City Grabbing Self-Driving Niche, that Carnegie Mellon's been involved in some of this autonomous mobility or automated mobility since the last time the Tigers won the World Series.
They have. Carnegie Mellon University is a private university founded by Andrew Carnegie in about 1900 and was later combined with Andrew Mellon's Institute, I believe it was. And it has enormous capability in robotics. You know, and what was interesting for me to go there is, and you've covered this before, but Michigan has been positioning itself as the mobility center. We're going to be the mobility leader. We have the University of Michigan here. We have the big three automakers. We have a lot of suppliers and foreign-owned automakers that have their tech capability and their tech centers here in Southeast Michigan. Well, that's all true, but you go to a place like Pittsburgh and you find out that Uber Technologies has gone there and has got a big research and development test site. Well, why is that? Well, it's because of the robotics expertise at Carnegie Mellon and a couple of key faculty members who have, of course, attracted younger graduate students and PhD students, and they're creating not only research, but they're creating companies, one of which is a company that Delphi recently bought because they thought what they were doing was so good and they were going to be their gateway into automated driving. And in fact, the system that they're now developing that we rode in this recently and will be at CES is developed by that startup company that came from Carnegie Mellon. But I think the other thing that's really important to note here is that's not to say that Pittsburgh is going to be the ultimate center of automated driving. Because I think you talked, and I talked to one of the professors there who talked with us, very interesting guy, and he said, look, you know, when it comes to applying this and integrating all of this into actual production and manufacturing of these vehicles and the engineering of putting it all together into a vehicle that is attractive, that people want to own, that's not the expertise of Pittsburgh and Carnegie Mellon. That's the expertise of a University of Michigan. That's the expertise of General Motors or Ford or major suppliers who spend their lives integrating high technology, mechanics, and everything into an attractive package.
Well, that's a good segue. Then let's talk about the Michigan expertise and the recent development. You did another recent column on the, essentially almost the groundbreaking of the American Center for Mobility at Willow Run. Very exciting. And again, it sort of underscores our previous conversations about leadership in the great state of Michigan with respect to the mobility space. But a little bit about that center. Looks like ground has been broken and all systems are go.
Yeah, they are. I think the symbolism here is pretty powerful. I mean, let's remember that Willow Run was built by Henry Ford after World War II started, the whole concept was to build fighters, or bombers rather, for the World War II effort. At the time that he started the project, the United States was producing about one bomber a month. And by the time he was done, I think it was more like one a day. They did, I think, if memory serves, they did like 8,900 bombers at Willow Run. And then it fell on over time. It symbolized American prosperity and post-war prosperity, and then also symbolized the decline of American industrial prowess until it was just an empty hulk. Now it's going to be repurposed into this next generation 21st century testbed. That will be, I think, and I've said this many times in columns, will be the most revolutionary thing to hit transportation in the world since Henry Ford's Model T. And so I think the symbolism here is very powerful, number one. Number two, it is an effort to try and bring together all of the expertise that we're talking about here. Suppliers, software developers, automakers themselves, who, by the way, will be doing a lot of the testing of their vehicles in their own closed testing facilities. I mean, they're not going to be sharing and showing everything that they're doing to their competitors. But there will be a place at times for them to be using these test beds and for other people to be using these test beds. There's a lot of different kinds of, there's roads and there's underpasses. I think there's a triple overpass that was there as part of the Willow Run design that they will repurpose and make into part of their test track. I think it's a very exciting thing. And the other thing that's important to note is, in Southeast Michigan, we've had a lot of instances where these massive, massive industrial complexes from middle of last century have sat fallow for decades. I mean, the Packard plant in Detroit is another great example. They're so big, and they have a lot of environmental concerns attached to them, that it's really difficult for any kind of developer to go in there and say, oh, yeah, I can make this into a going concern, and I can do it profitably. And Willow Run would be in that list. And, you know, you look at it and you say, if for any other reason, we probably couldn't do something like this. I know that's how they feel at the MEDC in Lansing, that this was something that, this is a very unique use of this, a reuse of this site. And that's why another reason they're very excited about it and why I think Michigan taxpayers ought to be excited about it. I mean, this is something that can take this site and repurpose it and use it for productive reasons in this community.
I'm talking with Daniel Howes, Detroit News columnist and associate business editor. We're talking about mobility, autonomous vehicles, Michigan's leadership in this space. Daniel, when it comes to these sorts of initiatives that we've been talking about, these public-private partnerships, I've got to ask the question. We've just had an election. We've got a new administration. There's a lot of guesswork going on with respect to different trends or different directions the new administration might take us. Do you think that these things that we've been talking about are going to happen irrespective of who happens to be in political power, because it's being driven by the states, by the cities, by the private sector, and by academia? Or do you think government's going to have a key role, and maybe government could either get in the way of or enhance some of these initiatives?
Well, I think you'd have to unpack your question a little bit.
Yep.
The first part of that, I would say, is, you know, without at the risk of borrowing a campaign slogan, if you look at kind of what they're doing at Willow Run and what the industry is doing in terms of its own profitability and aggressively investing in the future, you know, is that a kind of a Make America Great Again kind of thing? Well, maybe it could be, depending on how you look at it. But I think the more important point of your question is that I think this is going to happen irrespective of who is in the White House. Whether Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton likes the fact that the growth in the industry is outside the United States, that the truth is the growth in the industry is outside the United States. It's not here. Now, that's not to say that, you know, by, you know, 2022 that we might not be at selling 19 million units a year in the United States, hopefully. But is it going to continue to have the exponential growth you're seeing in other parts of the world? I don't think the answer is no, and there's not an auto executive that would tell you that it would be. And if you're an investor in these companies, what are they looking for? They're investing in growth. And one of the major reasons that the auto company share prices continues, they stuck in the mud pretty much, is because despite the fact that they're making more money they've made in my and your lifetimes in North America, investors are saying, where's the growth, number one? And number two, we don't know how this mobility and autonomous thing is going to play out. And until we have some more clear knowledge of that, we're going to bet more on the guys that are growing faster, which is like i.e. Silicon Valley, than we are going to be investing in typically low-margin Detroit and the auto industry. But, you know, I think the future in this industry potentially can be very bright. You know, what hit me a lot when on the recent trip to Pittsburgh were numbers that were being thrown out about how many thousands of engineers these auto companies and suppliers are hiring. I mean, thousands, a lot of whom are being used for software development, and they may be electrical engineers or mechanical engineers in background, but they're being hired to do software development. So if you can imagine people who can develop software, which I couldn't develop a piece of software if you held a gun to my head, but who are developing software but have a background in the traditional disciplines that really have animated the auto industry for decades. So it's a bringing together of new skill sets and traditional skill sets. And the opportunities for young people, I don't know about you, but I have had the opportunity of running into young people. My wife and I are sea kayakers, and we were on a recent paddle, and we had this young guy, really nice guy. Turns out he's just been hired by Ford. He's come in from Florida, and he's a young software developer, and he's working on the mobility operation at Ford. And I've met a couple of through paddling of, and I can think of two. Another one at General Motors doing the same thing. Young person who is coming in to develop software and work on mobility, and that's what they're hiring. So they are hiring young people, but they are people that have the education and the capability to do this kind of work.
Yeah, I recently, on a flight back from North Carolina, sat next to a young man who was coming out of a school in Mississippi, had an interview with Ford the next day out in Dearborn. Exactly the same thing, software development, although his training at this institution down in Mississippi was in, I think it was in electrical engineering.
Exactly, and I think we're making the same point, and I think that's, so there is a lot of interesting opportunity here. I think this is great for this for the Michigan and Southeast Michigan community, but really across the state, bringing people from all around the country. You know, these companies are having a different profile in terms of how they are being regarded. You know, Ford has really beefed up its center in Silicon Valley and continues to expand it there. They're approaching it a little different than GM. They believe that if they have a physical presence, a big physical presence in the middle of this, that's going to really help them build their brand and enable them to attract people. General Motors' attitude is a little less, we need to be seen and have a big physical presence, but that we need to have relationships with a lot of, both those companies have big shops out there that whose job is to maintain relationships with the startup community and evaluate companies and say, who can help us? How can their technology, and those sometimes lead to acquisitions. And the most prominent one was when General Motors acquired Cruise Automation for over $500 million, and they're now part of their autonomous vehicle development.
Daniel, one other question while we're on it, related to possible administrative impact on what I call the green-related issues in the industry. But do you think that the Trump administration, and I know this is speculation, there will be any impact on things like CAFE standards?
Well, I think particularly after what President Obama recently did here, where he basically tried to cement his EPA regs before leaving office, I think it's entirely possible that you're going to see the auto companies take another run at this with President-elect Trump or in a Trump administration, particularly with, you've got a nominee for a transportation secretary who's an old veteran in Republican administrations and has also worked in the transportation department under George H.W. Bush. So I think that there's going to be a little bit of a different approach here. Do I think they're going to roll the whole thing back and we're going to be back to the bad old days of the 60s and the 70s? No, I don't think. I think that has, because of what we talked about at the top, because of what's happening elsewhere around the world, and frankly, I think there's a greater environmental awareness across American society about things like fuel economy and emissions and clean air and clean water and all those kinds of things, that it doesn't necessarily cleave along partisan lines. and that people are have kind of reconciled themselves with, you know, it's pretty good to live in a world like this as opposed to one that's dirty and makes you choke. I mean, that's what they do in China, and that's one of the things that they're trying to deal with. But I would anticipate there are going to be some changes. I mean, you're already seeing signs with the auto companies working those relationships. And Ford particularly has spent a lot of time working with the transition team and trying, and that's in part because Ford got so bashed by Donald Trump during the campaign that I think they're trying to get back level set with this administration and build relationships. But I think you're going to see a real change between the industry and the incoming administration in terms of policymaking, and it will be less adversarial. I wouldn't say it would be non-adversarial, but I think it will be less adversarial.
Yeah, I totally agree with your assessment on there's going to be some pullback in the EPA because clearly the EPA, in terms of things like Waters of the United States, there's been some overreach by EPA, to say the least. And I also agree the Clean Water Act, the Clean Air Act, I mean, those things are here to stay. But I just got to add, anecdotally, we heard from a Ford Vice President for Sustainability, John Vieira, whom you probably know, and our own President Luana Sima, that Bill Ford and Mary Vera both had conversations with Donald Ford expecting the worst and Donald Trump came out of those conversations feeling like he asked good questions, he listened, and frankly, I think the tenor of that was that they were both a bit surprised at the caliber and quality of the conversation.
Yeah, I've been impressed when talking with people about that the Trump, at least that, and I've heard him on radio interviews, and he's far more thoughtful, and he seems to have a much better command of detail than he certainly displays and has displayed on the campaign trail. Or in some of his other kinds of public statements. I think that's right. And I've talked to some people who have been involved in meetings and conversations with him from the industry, and they've said this, similar things to what you just said, that people do come away with impressed that he seems to understand the issues and has a quick grasp. But you know what? At the end of the day, it's not about what he says. I'm a big believer in this. It's about what he and his administration do. At this point, it's too soon to tell what that's going to be.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Daniel, we've taken a lot of your time. I'm very much appreciated. We've been talking mobility. We've been talking autonomous vehicles. We've been talking the Trump administration, a number of topics with Daniel Howes, award-winning Detroit News columnist and associate business editor. His columns run in the Detroit News on Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays. They're always informative, thoughtful. And Daniel, we appreciate, as always, your time on Greening the Great Lakes.
Thank you very much.